I'm Mina.
And I'm Madison. And this is
Weekly Wondering.
Hi, Madison.
Hi, Nina.
How's it going?
We are here. And that's about it.
Not living.
No. Oh, yeah. What did I say? Living. We're loving. Laughing. We're laughing. Live, laugh, love.
Just the girly things.
Truly hashtag just the girly things. Let's bring that back.
Yeah, those are some of my favorite. That was like the time of girl code. All of that, you know? Hey, guys. How you doing? This is Weekly Wondering, the podcast.
It's a podcast?
Where we wonder.
About things?
Weekly.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Goodbye.
That's it. That's what you came for. That's what you got.
Yeah. No. But it is a podcast where we wonder about things weekly. We've been wondering about things weekly for 38 episodes.
Jesus right? Christ on a bike. Yeah,
this
we have.
This is number 38, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Unless we've counted wrong. But I think so.
Wouldn't that be fun?
It's like we're on episode 62.
Okay. Well, I don't really have anything to say to you guys except happy St. Patrick's Day.
Hope your hangovers have come to an end by this point.
Yeah, definitely. 2 years ago, Madison. Hi, guys. You get to learn about Madison and I.
I thought you were just going to say about me, and I was like, don't tell them my secrets.
You get to learn about Madison really quickly. No, 2 years ago, Madison, for St. Patrick's Day, we had our St. Patty's Day Beer Friday party where we dyed. Or 3 years ago, maybe at this point. I don't know. 2 years ago. Where we dyed vodka, green apple vodka green, and drank an entire bottle of it. With our dearest friends. In our house.
Don't remember that.
I have the pictures to prove it, so.
I don't want to see them.
Nope. Last night I was going through my phone and Joseph and I were on the phone and I was like, and he was like, what? And I was like, 2019, St. Patrick's Day. And I went,
I remember that. I just, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So cheers, everybody.
Cheers to regrets.
And I hope your St. Patrick's Day is full of green apple regrets.
Mm. But what are we, what are we here to talk about today? We got a two-parter here today.
We got a two-parter, guys. Another two-part episode. Our last two-part episode was about cults.
Yeah, we haven't done one. That was an early one, too. I think that
cults?
Was like episode.
Was it about cults?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Because we like first talked about cults in general, and then we like picked a couple to actually talk about.
Okay, cool. This two-parter episode is about child services. So adoption, foster care, the systems that are, the statistics, some things, just a lot of things involving that. So yeah, it'll be this like first episode we're kind of doing like about foster care, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like a general like about foster care, what brings kids into the system, some things that happen for kids to get out of the system. And then our second episode is gonna kind of be a deeper dive into like the adoption kind of part of the system.
Yeah.
So with that, we give you a trigger warning that there will probably be talk about abuse and substance abuse of, you know, several kinds, unfortunately. substance, physical, emotional.
Comes you know, with the topic, just so you know.
Things if- that come.
You know, we just don't, you know, we've given, I think, some trigger warnings before, but, like, in the middle of the episode.
Yeah. So but this is one that we were like, we need one.
Yes. So this is a, like, actual serious one. So, you know.
So.
Goodbye.
Do with that what you. So, log off now.
And good night.
Good night. Yes. Cool.
We're gonna get started, I guess.
Yeah, you're gonna talk, right, first?
If you insist.
I do, yeah.
Oh. Okay, great. I am going to talk about, first, just kind of a little bit of general analysis, talky chit-chat about the foster care system, what Google got me, you know, some, but I'm going to start off first with some numbers. So that was a nice way to like put it into perspective to start.
Sure.
So this is, basically it's the AFCARS report, on, it's like for the Children's Bureau and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And it's the Adoption and Foster Care Analysis and Reporting System. Mm-hmm. So it's basically all of the United States, all of the, yeah, yeah. I was like, is that how you say them? Is that what we are?
All of them?
And I will preface this. I am talking like specifically about the United States because, yeah, you know, it's just very so much country to country and like,
yeah,
it's too much of a dive to get into for one episode. And we'll touch a little bit about international,
yeah,
with the adoption next week.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll touch a little bit international on that. But first, right now, I'm specifically just talking United States.
Sure.
So this is the fiscal year of 2019. So a lot of this data was gathered and submitted in like June, and some of it was corrected by September of 2020. So that's okay. Kind of where we're at data-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So the number in foster care on September 30th of this fiscal year was 423,997. The number that entered foster care during this year was, the year of 2019, was 251,359 kids. The number that exited foster care during this time was 248,669, which I might add is a number that's decreasing the past couple years. It, like, kind of wavers, but is not...
right.
Is not getting any better.
Right. Right.
Right.
right.
correct. we're not okay, by the way.
No.
I'm going to try. I, like, took out a lot of stuff that, like, made me cry from, like, my notes. Because I just don't want to cry.
Yeah. Well, there were a lot of rants that, like, I, like, you know, started going on in my head talking to myself when I was writing my notes of being like, and the statistics and the stigma and just the number and like being like, all right, like I got to bring it. I have to bring some peace to myself. Find some peace for myself.
Yeah. Number served by the foster care system during this fiscal year. So any kind of interaction with the foster care system was 672,594 kids. And the number waiting to be adopted on September 30th of 2019 was 122,216 kids.
Jesus Christ.
And the percentages for, like, the children in foster care age-wise is kind of all over the place. It's mainly in the 1 to 8 area. 8's kind of, like, the median of it all, like, 8 years, 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where a lot of kids lie. But really, those first 8 years is a good number of the kids. And, like, even saying that, like, there's still high percentages in, like, the 15, 16, 17-year-olds as well. Like, none is like, oh, this is drastically lower than the rest of them. Right. Like, they're it's all... like,
they're all a lot of numbers.
Yeah. Because, like, for example, like, 16-year-olds, it's still 22,453 kids.
Jesus Christ.
Male and female is pretty evenly split. Mm-hmm. For 2019, it was 52% male, 48% female. So it's not any crazy difference. And yeah, so that was kind of my, like, there's some numbers to get us started and just kind of throw us into gear, you know?
Yeah, throw us right into the pit.
Truly. Just get us right into the sadness pit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a little bit of background, going way back. So the placement of children in foster care homes is a concept that goes as far back as the Torah, the Bible, even the Quran, you know, talks about children being cared for, like, under duty of the law, or caring for orphans and widows, you know. That kind of has always been a concept.
Sure.
Early Christian church records indicate orphan children lived with widows who were paid by the church, you know. So everybody kind of gets... It's always been a concept to, like, want to take care of orphan children.
Orphan.
Kids whatever. In need. Sure.
Yeah.
So early foster care history in the United States
English poor laws in the 1500s allowed for the placement of poor children into indentured service, which is a theme for most of the early times of foster work, you know, as they're like, oh, small child, you can just work for me.
Yeah.
And that's a childhood, apparently.
Freaking Oliver Twist head ass. Like.
This practice was imported to the United States and marked the beginning of placing children into foster homes. Even though indentured service permitted exploitation, it was, quote unquote, an improvement over the almshouses where the children didn't learn a trade and were exposed to unsanitary conditions and abusive caretakers. Mm-hmm. My mind went to, what's her fucking name? Cosette? Is that it? And, like, mm-hmm. Les Mis. Like, that's where my mind went to. Mm-hmm. Was like, her, you know, there is a castle literally on a cloud.
Literally. Like, It's a Hard Knock Life.
Yes.
Like.
Every orphan musical out there.
Like, yeah, little girls, like.
You, Miss Hannigan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me, Daddy Warbucks.
And that's our personalities, folks.
Get me in a bald cap. God, what a movie. I just want to talk more about Annie.
That's also next week's episode.
All the different variations of Annie. That should be an episode.
Next week, instead of part two, we'll just be discussing Annie.
And then we get into the 1800s. We start to see in 1853, Charles Loring Brace was a minister, and he founded the Children's Aid Society in New York City. He saw so many children sleeping on the streets, he decided that he wanted to do something about it. So our good friend Mr. Brace started the Orphan Train Movement. What's that, you ask? Well, it's where we put over 150,000 orphan children from New York City onto trains and sent them to farms across the country.
What is this?
So it's the orphan train movement.
What?
And so they basically took homeless children of New York, put them on trains to go work on farms in the Midwest with families.
No.
That's like what the plan was. And they did this for 75 years.
What? What?
Something I've never heard of.
I've never heard of that.
And, you know, once they were sent to the farms, some children were treated with love and respect, while others were treated as servants, were abused, and were often required to work long hours. Nevertheless, as the emphasis was on giving abandoned and abused children a family, Brace's system became the foundation of today's foster care system. Mm. This is what we base this on.
Cool.
And ain't that a real...
Ain't that a kicker? Yeah, I was gonna say it, and then I was like, maybe I shouldn't say it.
Foster homes in New York cities in the 1800s were often abusive, so this was supposedly the better option, was to put them on trains and get rid of them.
Okay, cool.
And there's this whole thing where, this is graphic warning, I just put jazz hands to that, just so everyone knows.
Graphic warning, imagine jazz hands.
The jazz hands are implied. They're warning hands, but they kind of looked like jazz hands. In 1807, an 8-year-old orphan named Mary Ellen Wilson received daily whippings and beatings at her foster home. There was no organization to protect abused children, so attorneys at the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, the ASPCA, took her case.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And her attorneys argued that the laws protecting animals from abuse should not be greater than protecting children.
That
you know?
Is true. Yeah.
And so Mary Ellen Wilson's case went to court, and the foster mom was convicted of assault and battery, given a how many year sentence, Nita?
Like what? Like 3 days and like a fucking lemon pound cake? I don't know.
A 1 year sentence.
Okay, great.
For abusing this child and probably many more if she was controlling a whole fucking foster home.
I can't. I literally can't.
Anywho.
We've just started and I'm already.
I'm on page three of notes.
Already at my breaking point.
So then we go into, like, the 1900s, which starts, like, social agencies and foster parents. So in the early 1900s, social agencies began to pay and supervise foster parents. The government began state inspections of foster homes. Records were kept to increase accountability, and children's needs were considered when placements were made. In addition, services were provided to birth families to enable the child to reunify or return home. Foster parents began to be seen as an integral part of a team effort to provide dependent children as states began to formalize the process and enact regulations meant to protect children. So, like, we got, like, a baseline.
Cool.
You know. Thank you, the 1900s.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So, a little more about just, like, foster care in the United States in general. So, foster care is a term used for a system in which a minor who has been made a ward is placed in an institution, group home, or private home of a state-certified caregiver, usually referred to as a foster parent.
Mm-hmm.
The placement of this child is usually arranged through the government or social service agency. You're going to talk more about, you know, where the child goes, how they get into it, kind of stuff. The institution, group home, or foster parent is provided compensation for expenses. The state, via the family court and child protection agency, stand in loco parentis to the minor, making all the legal decisions, while the foster parent is responsible for, like, day-to-day care of the minor. And the foster parent, again, is, you know, rewarded for its services through the state. In the United States, foster home licensing requirements vary from state to state, but are generally overseen by each state's Department of Child Protective Services or Human Services. In some states, counties have this responsibility instead of the state, so depends where you are.
Sure.
Each state's services are monitored by the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, and through reviews such as the Child and Family Service Reviews, the Title IV-E Foster Care Eligibility Reviews, Adoption and Foster Care Analysis and Reporting System, which is where I got the statistics from earlier, and Statewide Automated Child Welfare Information System Assessment Reviews. So there's a lot out there that's supposedly supposed to be protecting these kids.
Okay.
Supposed to be.
Yeah.
But boy, oh boy, is that kicker of that whole, you know, the states are in charge of it. And boy, oh boy, do I know some states that don't really like to give a shit.
Yeah.
And that. Yeah. And that.
And ain't that a kick in the head.
Quote of the day. You know, and there's a whole foster parent licensing process.
Right.
You know, you can't, you know, there's a lot of stuff of, like, you know, no record of abuse or neglect, you know.
That's probably good. Yeah.
No diseases in the family that could possibly hurt the children.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that, that, like, is supposed to, again, all of this is supposed to be helping the children.
Right.
Supposed to be.
Supposed to be.
Supposed to be. I just, like, want, like, in, like, like cursive-y font, you know, like, supposed to be.
Supposed to be.
Like a whisper, like a supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, it's like that thing that, like, you know, that is, like, always going to be a discussion. That's like, what? There has to be a better option. Like,
yeah.
And, like, I know that, like, the foster care system in America is out of control and, like, run down and quite literally just needs to be, like, abolished and rebuilt. But, like, you know, until we see that happen, like, there has to be something that we can do that's not this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there just has to be something.
And it's so hard when it's, like, all, it's a government thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it takes so fucking long.
Yeah.
To do anything government-based.
Yeah.
And, like, we like to get distracted with other things. And so then we just kind of, like, kick children to the curb because, you know, they can't do shit because they're, like, 8.
Yeah. So, it's, like, ridiculous.
They're not on the forefront of our worries, apparently.
Yeah. It just, like, I don't know. And it's, like, I know that, like, social workers, like, that's even, that's part 75 of this episode. It's, like, you know, social workers are overworked and, like, you know, that's a whole thing in itself. And just, like, foster care, like, you know, like, job and family services in general, like, the way that it moves and is, like, you know, just, like, working is, like, such a broken system.
Yeah.
But, like, where, I guess the question is, like, where do we start and how do we literally shatter, like, the system?
Yeah, and I'll talk about it in a little while. But, like, I get into this whole, it's like whenever they, you know, one of the last pieces of legislation they put through in, like, the past 20 years, mm-hmm. and it, like, talks about, like, an increase of regulations, and it's like the people who were for it were like, this is great because we can get kids out of abusive homes faster and, like, take away, like, all of the parents' rights faster. And people were like, but sometimes we're taking away the parents' rights way too fast and we're, you know, yes. ripping these kids out of homes
yes.
without asking any questions.
Yes.
And then immediately getting that kid into the adoption system and, yes. like, waiving all the parents' rights.
Yes.
It's like...
And it's, like, and it's baffling. Like, it is... It, like, it overwhelms me to think about. Like, it's one of those things where, like, I think about it and then, like, I keep thinking about it and then, like, I just, like, scream.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, how, what? Like, you think about it and it's like, how do you... Like, how do you stop that? You know, like, yeah. what do we do? And, like, I remember, because, like, you know, my mom works in this. This is her, like, this is her thing. So, like, I remember, like, being a child and, like, you know, hearing her, you know, talk and just, like, things that happened, you know, like, understanding, not really understanding, but, like, getting a general sense of just, like, certain, you know, things that were happening or, like, certain, you know, things that would go on. And, like, at the time, definitely didn't have the, like, emotional, like, brain capacity as, like, a 9 or 10 year old to, like, think about it. And, but, like, then, you know, now I think about, like, those stories that, like, I still think about and, like, are in my head. And I'm like, I couldn't even imagine, like, listening to, like, my mom, like, recap a story such as, like, these that these kids go through.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, imagine being an 8-year-old and, like, having to go through this
yeah
once or twice or 3 times or whatever the situation is. I'm like, how do you even, like, how does a child deal with that, you know? Yeah. It's yeah,
well, because I kept looking at the thing and, like, when I was reading the first part, I was like, yeah, that's great, like, you know, like, people, like, kids are getting the help they need faster,
mm-hmm.
and then it was like they're being taken out too quickly, and I was like, that's also true, and I was like, yeah. What do you do when both yeah. parts are true and yeah. like both sides need help?
Yeah.
And like the law just kind of like screws one or the other. And yeah. so like you have to pick one.
Yeah. Because that's the thing is like I feel like so much of it is like exactly what you said is like what do you do when like we need to help both sides?
Yeah.
You know, like what do we do?
Someone is being hurt with like both options.
Yeah. With both options. Like how do we make that not a thing?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's our weekly wondering.
Yeah. How, if anybody's got the answer.
Who has the layout for a great new foster care system?
Let us know. Email us at www.help.
You know,
help the children.
You know, we have an email. We can actually have them send it to us.
Scratch that. Send it to, what's our email?
Like, I think weeklywonderingpodcast@gmail.com.
Send it to that.
As it sounds. I think it's also on our Instagram.
Send it to that.
Someone have the blueprint. Write it out.
Please.
Have I ever told you?
No, no. Not one of these.
No. No, I changed my mind. I don't want to tell this story another day. It's not a bad story. It's just like more of a like discussion story. And we don't have time to get into a whole how I designed an entire like teen facility at one point in my life.
Okay. That's our
happen,
next project. That's our next project.
I like drew out the like I had the designs all drawn out, had a bunch of plans for it. It was going to be great.
Sugar Rush Teen Sweets.
Sweets, but like S-U-I-T.
Yep. Yep. Don't steal that, guys.
Anywho, I want to go back to talking about the orphan train.
Oh, God.
Because I still have more questions. And this site talked about it as well. So.
Okay.
So, you know, in the United States, foster care really started as a result of the efforts of Charles Loring Brace, as I said. So in the mid-19th century, some 30,000 homeless or neglected children lived in New York City on the New York City streets. Just like were out there. Think Newsies.
Think Oliver Twist. Think Les Mis. Think Annie. Think Newsies. What else? What else are we missing?
I only know orphans through musicals.
What else? Think, think Freak Show. Think the Freak Show episode Pepper.
Oh no, not Pepper.
Literally the most heartbreaking thing that could have ever happened to me was that episode.
I'm tearing up. So Brace took these children off the streets and placed them in with families in most states in the country. Brace believed that children would do best in a Christian farm family.
What? I don't know. I don't know if anybody
would do well in a Christian farm family.
Yeah. Sorry if you live in a Christian farm family, but I just feel scared.
Makes me think of like every like Lifetime movie that's like, and he was a small town man on a farm.
It makes
and he
me
was
think,
the pastor. Like,
it makes me feel scared. So.
And he did this to save them from, you know, a lifetime of suffering. Sure. Mm-hmm. And he sent these children to families by train, which gave them the orphan train movement. Mm. This lasted from 1853 to, like, 1928, 1929-ish.
I just, like, nothing that is called the orphan train movement can be a good thing. I just don't know what to tell anyone.
It's like, and I've just never heard of it.
You literally can't convince me that that's a good thing.
No. And so when Brace died in 1890 and his sons took over his work. And then, you know, it was kind of when like the Children's Aid Society, like kind of blossomed, we'll say. And then they retired eventually. And so the Children's Aid Society created a foster care approach that became the basis for the Federal Adoption and Safe Families Act of 1997 called the Concurrent Planning. This greatly impacted the foster care system. Children's AIDS workers works with biological and foster parents to achieve permanency. But from the mid-1800s to the eve of the Great Depression, orphan-trained children were placed with families who pre-selected them. So these people pre-selected them via an order form.
So, like...
Like human trafficking, like, one might
yeah,
say.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was, like, trying to find something that was less human trafficky, but, like, that's literally what it is.
Like a catalog of kids, you know?
Yeah, like, that's literally what it is.
And, like, it would specify age, gender, hair, and eye color.
For what reason?
So they could fit into the perfect family.
I am going to lose my mind. So, I'm going to.
Or, wait for this one. In other cases, train loads of children were assembled on stages, train platforms, or town halls, and examined by prospective parents.
Like fucking cattle?
Basically.
I can't.
It was basically like, they like say, it was like picking the best apple from the bin. Sometimes a child would be separated from his or her brothers and sisters, or would end up in a family that only wanted them to work.
Okay, so I'm gonna take all, like, how about... parent farm Christian farm parents, how about I take you and I pluck you from your Christian farm and start putting you in other places?
Also, what gets me is these were like New York City children. Granted, it's New York City in like the late 1800s, but like, you know,
yeah,
but like, can you imagine how confusing it would be to go from like the city to being with a random family on a farm, and suddenly you have to like milk the fucking cows, you know?
Are you kidding me?
Like, away from like any resemblance of family, whether that's like people you know or like, you know.
Yeah.
It's all very. That's enough of the orphan train. I just found a couple more facts in it, and I just found the whole thing fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I can't believe that also, was something. I guess I can't believe it was something we did. But, yeah, like, I also just, like, did not know that was a thing.
Yeah. Well, like, the thing that also, like, I guess that, like, we could talk about that comes out of, like, that might come out of the orphan train that, like, we could kind of relate to today is, like, you know, the idea that foster kids don't get to pick where they go, you know? Like, obviously... they go in a home that's fit for them or a home that's available or whatever that is. And a lot of the time that does mean that they're like separated from their families or, you know, like brothers and sisters or whatever that means. But also, like, then you start thinking about like, you know, a lot of the rules that are still in place in foster care, you know, like aren't like, oh, we're sending kids on a train and like putting them on a stage for people to pick from. But like a lot of those rules that are still in place still seem like they are maybe in place to benefit said foster parents, you know, the kids that are literally suffering.
They have like more of the control of being like, oh, this one's a good fit, this one's not, like,
yeah,
you know, kids, it's the whole thing of like kids only have so much power with adults.
Yeah,
like I think we're kind of getting to that era of like trusting kids more than we trust like what the, you know, adults. Like that whole
thank fuck.
Because you know what, a kid never lie to me.
Literally.
An adult
always. Literally.
So like, you know, hoping that, but like, it's always been the thing of like, you know, like a kid says something and the adult says something else and they're always gonna fucking believe the adult.
And then for some reason it's the adult, because that's the thing is like, why don't you let, and I'm not saying, you know, every child should be able to be like, no, I don't want to go there. Yeah. I don't want to, but like, why don't you fucking let me decide if this family is going to be the best fit for me and if I'm going to thrive in this environment and like in this household? Because then like the thing that's most frustrating, and like, I'll talk about it a little bit later when I talk about like other stuff, but like the thing that's most frustrating is like, then, you know, when a household doesn't work out, say for some reason, and say the foster family like parents or whatever don't get along with the child, or you know, the child's not thriving in their school and their whatever's happening, then it's the child's fault and they have behavior issues and like all of these things. And it's like, well, wouldn't you have behavior issues if like you got ripped from your family for whatever reason and then you were told to go live with these random people who you have nothing in common with and like maybe had to switch schools and maybe had to do, like, wouldn't you maybe be a little upset?
Well, I mean, and I'm going to go into my next section because that literally is talking about that same thing. So I'm going to talk about California. Okay. Just in general.
We're going to...
California.
Add them to the beef list.
Just throw them on there. So California has the largest population of foster care youth in the nation.
Mm.
With 55,218 children in the system as of 2012.
What?
Yeah. This is over twice as many as the 20,529 foster children in New York, and that's the state with the second largest population of foster youth. So there's a 35,000 gap between first and second.
I was gonna say, that's a lot of...
Yeah.
That's a lot. Like, 20,000 kids is a lot of kids.
And, like, California's fucking big, but, like,
California's big, and I get that it's all about population, but you're 55,000?
And over 30% of the California foster youth reside in the Los Angeles County, amounting to 18,523 children.
Mm-mm. We gotta fix that.
We're going to save Brittany, and then we're gonna save 18,000 children.
Yeah, we're taking Brittany, and we're taking those kids with us.
We got a couple buses. Get on the road.
Madison, let's make our new job.
Saving the children.
Saving the children.
We'll add it to the end of the mantra at the end.
Okay.
Save Brittany and save the children.
And save the children.
We'll let people interpret it as they want.
As they want to.
Children can be removed from their homes and placed into the foster care system for a variety of reasons. But in California, 81.2% of the children were removed because of neglect. Even after being placed in the foster care system, however, these children might not find the care or stability they need. Girls in the foster care, this is what I was going to say that ties to what we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Girls in the foster care system have been shown to have marginally higher rates of teenage pregnancy than the general population of California. Children in foster care also have to face disproportionately higher rates of mental illnesses, as some studies have shown that as much as 47.9% of foster care youth show signs of serious emotional or behavioral issues. And after aging out of the system at 18, research has shown that previous foster youth still face difficult instability in their lives. As much as 30% of previous foster children are diagnosed with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, from their life, like just literally being
just
in the foster care system.
Just living.
And only about 50% graduate from high school, and less than 10% graduate from college. Jesus, it's fine. Christ. You don't need college. That's a conversation for another day.
That's
college is a lie.
47.
College is a lie.
Episode 47. Coming to you soon.
We'll have to write that down somewhere. A study focused on foster care alumni in Los Angeles County showed that about 65% leave foster care without a place to live, and 25% are incarcerated by the age of 20. Despite these difficulties, California is working towards easing the tradition for foster youth through programs and legislation like the California Fostering Connections to Success Act of 2010, which expands upon similar federal legislation increased age limit to receive foster care benefits. So, like, they're trying to do something, but Jesus Christ, not enough.
Yeah.
That's the issue, is, like, they keep being like, and here's a nickel. Like, and here's, yeah, like, 10%, you yeah know?
Literally.
But, like
here's... here's a dollar. Go yeah figure that
go
out.
Go get
for
an
yourself
apartment in yeah fucking Los Angeles.
Literally. I can't. Yeah. It's like, we set them up for failure.
That's the thing, is like, they just, it's not that they have no chance, but like, fuck, their chances are limited because of the situation they're given.
Yeah. Like, their chances are shot. Literally shot. It's like, not even in half. It's like 25, like,
at like a 12%.
Like literally. Yeah, you know, like, well, because you, like, you think about how hard it is, like, for one of, like, you and, like, one of us to get an apartment in LA, you know, like, with the situation that we're in, you know, that, which is, like, going to high school, like, living in a two-parent household, what, you know, like, whatever, going to high school, going to a four-year college program, like, having a job, like, doing all of the things that, like, you could say are, like, quote-unquote, like, a normal life, and, like, how difficult it still is to, like, be on your own and get an apartment anywhere, you know, and just, like, becoming an adult and living that life. So it's, like, yeah, so, like, take away literally all of that.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're 18 and you're expected to just do that.
And irrelevant, but kind of on the same connection, it's just something I saw on Twitter today. Are we talking enough about how apparently, like, homeless people aren't getting any stimulus check? Like, they don't get...
You know what?
Like, are we not talking about this enough?
We aren't. You're right. We are not talking about this enough.
Because I saw that tweet and I went, hold up.
We...
And
you
I
know
went,
what?
That checks out.
This is...
But also, what the fuck?
We are not talking about this. Interesting.
It we'll was something I saw. We need to, we'll have our
you
own
and
process.
I, we'll have a process yeah about that.
But I just, like, saw that and I went, fucking interesting.
Yeah, I don't, yeah. Yeah. But that's the thing, is, like, so what do you do? What happens? Like, yeah, how do you expect said child to do this thing?
It's just heartbreaking. It's yeah what it is. And yeah. Let's talk about fucking Maryland.
Oh, God.
These are the two states I have to talk about. California and Maryland. Literally opposite ends of the map. So after a class action lawsuit was filed in 1984, a federal court ruled that Maryland had not been ensuring the constitutional rights of its foster children. And as a result, the state's foster care program was placed under a consent decree in 1988. The decree remained in place in 2003 when state employee Michelle Lane discovered and made known continued issues with social worker assignments under this program. In 2009, the decree was modified to apply various standards independent of federal or constitutional requirements. And as of September 2018, Maryland's foster care program remained under court supervision with an exit requiring full compliance with the consent decree for 3 6-month reporting periods in a row. So basically, Maryland's a fucking mess and, like, apparently doesn't know how to take care of children. Those were, like, the two states that I had to mention. I was like, Maryland, what?
Like, what?
What are you doing?
And that's the thing, is, like, I'm sure they're not the only two that have had, like, crazy things, yeah, obviously. But it's like, what? Like, what? You're joking, right? Yeah. Like, you have to be joking me.
Mm-hmm. And there's been, like, you know, legislation passed, you know, like, in 1997, the Adoption and Safe Families Act, the ASFA. I did say those right. The letters all jumbled in my head as I said them. Was passed. This reduced the time children are allowed to remain in foster care before being available for adoption. This is what I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. The new law requires state child welfare agencies to identify cases with, quote-unquote, aggravated circumstances, make permanent separation of child from the birth family the best option for the safety and well-being of the child. You know, like, they can do it real quick and say they should have no contact forever, you know? And one of the main components of ASFA is the imposition of stricter time limits of reunification efforts. So proponents of ASFA claimed that before the law was passed, the lack of such legislation was the reason it was common for children to languish in care for years with no permanent living solution identified. Opponents of ASFA argued that the real reason children languished in foster care was that too many were taken needlessly from their parents in the first place. Mm-hmm. And since ASFA did not address this, opponents said it would not accomplish its goals and would only slow a decline in the foster care population that should have occurred anyways because of a decline in reported child abuse. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I believe in a decline in reported child abuse, but you know.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe in that. I think that this situation brings up two things for me that I, like, think about. One is, like, when we talk about, like, you know, kids being taken away from their families too quickly, too much, things like that. One of the things that, like, continuously will frustrate me, a hill that I will literally die on, is, like, the fact that, you know, and I'll talk about this when I talk about, you know, reasons that kids go into foster care, but it's like neglect, you know, obviously is a big, that's the umbrella. And obviously a lot of things fall under that umbrella, but like neglect can be defined as many things. And a lot of the time neglect means that the parents are poor, you know, and cannot financially take care of, you know, said child. But, like, the thing and the hill that I would like to die on is, like, we pay foster parents a significant amount of money to take care of said child, you know, bring said children into house, do the things that a parent should be able to do. So
why don't we pay that money to the parents that are struggling?
Why don't we just give that money to the parents if that is literally the only reason and the thing? Like, if the parent needs money to take care of a child, and that is the only thing stopping them from being able to, like, fully take care of and support their child, why is our first thought, let me take this child away and put them in someone else's home?
Yeah.
That's the hill that I would like to die on.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. And then, I don't remember what my second thing was, because I was too high up on that hill.
Sure.
But yeah, like, it just, it will always be a thing. And I'm like, but what if? Let's think.
Remix.
Couple questions.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the other thing, what I was thinking, I was like, what's the other thing? Is like, what is the thing that it goes with this whole situation is like, again, talking about like social workers who do, you know, wonderful, amazing work. But, like, you know, if somebody has to decide that a child is being taken out of a house, you know, and doesn't need to be in contact with birth parents for the rest of their lives, mm-hmm. that's a big decision.
Yes.
And I know it's not just, like, a social worker, you know, being like, I've decided this. I know it, you know, it goes through whatever. But, like, that is a large decision.
Yeah.
And I don't think is always, you know, made correctly. But it's like, what are the rules? What are the rules?
And it's one of those things that, like, I exhausted myself just then.
Yeah.
Like, we go back to, like, it has to be, like, a case-by-case basis. Yeah. But also, then it leads to so much room for error.
Yeah.
So then we're fucked. But, like, if we had strict rules, then, like, people would be allowed to get away with abuse in some, you know, loopholes, right, or, like, right, you know, we'd right. still end up taking away children from families that don't need to have their children taken away. Like,
right. Yeah. So it goes back to the, like, how do we help you, help me, help them, help you? Like,
yeah.
Like, what do we do? Because this can't keep happening.
No. I got just a couple more things.
Keep going.
And then I'll make you talk. so you can be angry and I can just be yelling in the background and it'll be great. I just found some interesting, like, constitutional cases that happened about, you know, the foster care system.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one in the case of Santoski versus Kramer for 455 U.S. 745
mm-hmm.
court jumbo, blah, blah, blah. the United States Supreme Court reviewed a case where the Department of Social Services, DSS, removed two younger children from their natural parents only because the parents had been previously found neglectant towards their oldest daughter. When the third child was only 3 days old, DSS transferred him to a foster home on the ground that immediate removal was necessary to avoid imminent danger to his life and health. So, because that they had their first child taken away,
right.
Could the courts now take away
right. their
two other children?
Mm-hmm.
So the Supreme Court vacated the previous judgment and stated before a state may sever completely and irrevocably the rights of the parents to their natural child, due process requires that the state supports its allegations by at least clear and convincing evidence. But until the state proves parental unfitness, the child and his parents share a vital interest in preventing the termination of the natural relationship.
Okay.
Which is, that's all I have on it. But, like, you know, like,
yeah,
it's just an interesting situation where I was like, huh. I was like,
yeah, like, what?
Well, they had their first child taken away after fucking 3 days old.
Jesus Christ.
And, like, apparently got these other two children from somewhere.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, like, does that mean that they're an unfit parent to every child?
Yeah, and I don't think it does, you know? They're, like...
What was the... Do you remember Jeannie the Wild Child?
Yes.
Didn't they have other kids?
Yeah.
For some reason, I think they did. Or there was another similar, like, situation similar to...
I say yes, but I hesitate to say yes.
Okay. You talk about your point while I Google it real quick.
Okay. Well, because I was going to say, it's one of those things where, like, I want to say now, like, no, you know, like, that doesn't mean that. But, like, it is definitely a case-by-case situation. And I guess it also has to be, like, it's one of those things where, like, it would have to be a, you know, well, what happened for first child to, you know, be taken away? Because I think, like, you know, many of the reasons that kids go into foster care have to do, you know, with neglect or, you know, parental drug abuse, blah, 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 where, you know, a parent has lost a child, you know, because they, you know, to the foster care system for whatever reason, because they were, you know, on, you know, had a drug addiction or whatever, were in a bad situation. But, like, if a parent can come back from that, you know.
Sure.
Then, yeah, obviously, like, I don't see why not, you know? And then I think that also, like, that sends us into a spiral, I feel like, of, like, the statistic and, like, difference of, like, just, like, black and brown people in the foster care system and, like, white people in the foster care system. Because, like, you hear it all the time, and then, like, you look at the statistics of, like, the amount of white kids that get taken out of homes, but, like, the amount of black kids that get taken out of homes that are, like... These are the same things, you know, but, like, for some reason, white kids are being returned to their homes more, you know,
sure.
Things are happening less. And then we bring on that statistic where I'm like, so then, like, it's a case by case, but also, like, maybe we're not doing the case by case correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, like, just what I can't, like, decide on is, like. Did they deserve to have their children taken away, or did they not, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, well, there's no, like, way.
No, continue.
Like, there's just no way to know. Like,
yeah, there's no way to know. Because it's, like, you don't want to be the person to be, like, no, like, we're not taking those kids away. And then something tragic happens, you know? But also, you take a kid away, and these parents have recovered, or whatever has happened, you know, is no longer an issue. And, like, we have now just put another kid into a system and, like, ripped another family.
Yeah. Well, it kind of reminds me of, you know, we were talking a couple weeks ago now, I think. Yeah, about Britney Spears and conservatorships
mm-hmm.
and, like, how that's supposed to be the last resort mm-hmm. for a person. And, like, that feels kind of similar to taking a child away from a family permanently, you know? Yeah. And yeah. I think we do that thing where we jump to it a lot more yeah. frequently than we should.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, Jeannie did have a brother, but also I don't think he was okay either.
Okay.
Because that...
Sad.
That dad was just
a nightmare human.
A real piece of shit. You know, whenever it starts with, the father never wanted children, cool. then I'm like, oh.
Don't even need to, I don't need to hear the rest.
Another one was, also District of Columbia Court of Appeals conclude that the lower trial court erred in rejecting the relative custodial arrangement selected by the natural mother who tried to preserve her relationship with the child. The previous judgment granting the foster mother's adoption petition was reversed, and the case remanded to the trial court to vacate the orders granting adoption and denying custody. And to enter an order granting custody of the child's relative. So, like, this court was basically, like, the mother was trying to, like, petition to have a relationship with her child. And they yeah. were just like, no, we're gonna go ahead and let this other woman adopt the child.
This is a hill. You want to talk about my second hill?
We got a fucking hills galore here.
Literally, the hills are alive with the sound of leave the children alone.
Yeah.
Like nothing in me, I guess, you know, again, extreme cases, but like, you cannot tell me that a system where, like, for example, a child was removed from a household, say, to drug abuse, you know, via parent.
Yeah.
Like, that the, you know, the solution was remove the child permanently, and then, you know, mom is not allowed to have a relationship with their child. You know, mom gets clean, mom does whatever, you know, mom gets a job, mom has a house, mom is stable, but mom is not allowed to, like, what, you cannot tell me that a system that tells me that, like, that is not worth, you know, repairing a relationship between this mother and this child, but, like, instead we will put all of our energy, money, you know, all of this into letting a entirely different human take your child.
Yeah.
Like, you can't tell me that a system that finds that to be, like, the end-all be-all, like, okay.
Well, like, and they just continue, like, you know, there's another one in 2007. Deanna Fogarty Hardwick obtained a jury verdict against Orange County, California, and two of its social workers for violating her 14th Amendment rights to familial association by unlawfully placing her kids in foster care.
Jesus Christ.
And it was a whole, like, $9.5 million judgment. And the county lost all of its appeals because the county kept trying to make appeals against it. And, like, you're like, why is the county trying so hard?
Like, what are...
Do they know something we don't? Like,
yeah, because that's the thing is, like, if, like, tell us or tell, you know, tell us. Call Madison and I. If there is an issue that is this severe, you need to call Madison and I.
Orange County. call
but,
us.
Like, say something, you know, like, if that's the thing. But, like, if it's just on principle or, you know, following what you were taught in training or what a supervisor is telling you to push for, or whatever the yeah. case be, like, that's saying, you know, we should take these children away from their parents. It's like, I can't.
It's such a mind fuck to me, because I just, like, go back and forth with, like, well, I'm like, well, if they're trying that hard, then, like, obviously something's fucking wrong.
Right.
Or I'm like, or this woman just, like, didn't deserve to have her kids taken away from her.
Yeah.
And the government found some reason to hold something against her.
Yeah.
And she lost her kids.
Yeah.
And, like, you just, yeah. it's such.
Well, it's, like, one, I think it was, like, a couple months ago where I literally, like, was scrolling. I don't know how I got into this tweet, but it was, like, one of those tweets where, you know, you look at it, you start thinking about it. You, like, look at it again, and then you're like, I have to turn off. How do I get rid of the internet? Like, how do I just, like, shut my mind off because it was a whole tweet and it was, you know, about incarceration of, you know, Black people over marijuana and all of these things. And then somebody in the thread was like, you know, they're talking about, like, you know, schools and, you know, like, Black men being incarcerated and, like, all these things and how, like, we have to, you know, we should be releasing these people. But then somebody in the thread was like, let's also, another little ditty that we don't talk about are all of the parents, especially Black parents, that have lost their children to marijuana, you know, lost their children because they had a marijuana charge or had marijuana in their bloodstream and they were deemed as unfit parents and sent, you know, and were incarcerated. And now here we are, like, seeing fucking movies that are like Bad Moms, you know, where they're like going to weed shops and like smoking weed in the car and then like going home to the kids. And it's like, haha, all fun and games. When like there are literal people that have lost their whole ass children.
Yeah.
Their because of this exact
lives,
their whole like, lives because of this that I'm like, oh, and like it was like a whole like this, I don't know, but like that whole tweet I just like looked stared
just and I was like, I have to phone.
Close it up, close everything up,
puts phone in box, like literally
throws phone in toilet, like I don't know. Because I was like, I it's just one of those things where it's like it spirals and it spirals and it's like, how do we come back from this?
Looks around for the answer. All right, you speak. That's what I got to get us.
Okay. As if I haven't spoken the entire time.
What? You? No.
No.
It's fine. I'll just interrupt you all the time.
Please do it. So I don't have like a ton because I knew that this was a lot of speaking, you know, that we had to do.
That we were going to get angry a bunch anyways. Yeah,
that we were going to just get mad. But I'm going to talk about some reasons that kids go into the foster care system, as well as like kind of getting out of the foster care system.
Sure.
So why are kids in the foster care system? Children are in foster care because they or their families are going through a crisis. Often these children, from babies to teens, have been removed from their parents because they are unsafe, abused, or neglected, or their parents are unable to care for them. By law, children in foster care are supposed to have contact with family, their parents, brothers, and sisters through regular visits while they are in foster care. Obviously, that's a case-to-case situation. Foster care or foster children report that being away from family and familiar surroundings are not always knowing what's next are among the hardest part of foster care, obviously. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, while they miss their families, some children may realize that being in a foster care system can be a better solution, at least temporarily.
Do they realize this? Do they?
Do they? And, like, the thing is, like, I know that, like, we are not saying that all, you know, everybody that is a foster parent is bad or, like, the entire foster care system is bad. We're just saying that there needs to be a better solution.
And this is a whole nother wormhole that I, like, kind of went down but had to stop myself. But it was, like, a lot of ties, sadly, to, like, foster care systems and then also, like, child human trafficking rings of, like, it's real easy to make a kid disappear like that.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a lot of connections with it. And, like, there's been, like, some laws passed to, like, try and stop it. But, like, it very much stresses me out that we just, like, trust these children to a bunch of people. And, like, again, not all foster parents, not all foster homes.
Yeah, not all.
But too many. Know, but too damn many.
But too damn fucking many. Yeah, because that's, it's too many. So now I'm just going to give you guys, it's the top, so obviously there are there are many reasons to go, like, that kids go into foster care, and everything is really a case by case, but there are six main kind of, like, categories that usually put a child into foster care. So number one is abuse. If it is discovered that a parent is physically or sexually abusing their children or child, the child may be taken by Child Protective Services. And if there are no relatives available to care for them, they may be placed in foster care. Each year, about 3.6 million referrals regarding child abuse are sent to Child Protective Services agencies, and abuse is the reason behind about 17% of foster care placements. Yikes. Just hiss. Yeah. Yeah. I can't even get into it. So that's number one. Number two is neglect. Childwelfare.gov defines neglect as the failure of a parent or other person with responsibility for the child to provide needed food, clothing, shelter, medical care, or supervision to the degree that the child's health, safety, and well-being are threatened with harm. According to the U.S. Children's Bureau in 2016, like statistics, 61% of children in foster care were placed there due to neglect. 61%.
That's so much neglect.
Making neglect the top reason for children being placed in foster care.
Why?
And that's the thing that I was like, that's what I was talking about and saying that I would bring this up later. I was like, but like, have we analyzed what we are defined, like, I know that we are saying that we have a definition for neglect.
Yeah.
But, like, are we looking at cases and, like, how are we analyzing what we are seeing as neglect? Like, is it money? Like, especially if, you know, providing food, clothing, shelter, medical care, like, what do you need for all those things? Money?
Well, that's, it's, yeah, and it's what you were saying earlier of, like, you know, if the parent can't afford to support the child, our first thought is to permanently remove the child from their life. That's what we go to. There feels like there are many steps.
Many.
Like,
a couple, at least.
Finances are the reason that you cannot take care of your child.
Yeah.
Because, like, also, you know, I don't know statistics and I, you know, can't speak from experience, but, like, you would think that, like, 9 times out of 10 in that situation, like, the parent is probably trying to take care of the child.
Yes.
The parent is probably doing its best to take care of the child.
Yes.
But, like, there's only so much you can do.
Yes.
Without having financial stability.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing is, like, that I, you know, it creates a bigger kind of issue and like a rolling, like this also becomes like a rolling topic of like finances, you know, is like a lot of the time neglect or reasons that, you know, I would say people go into, like, there are many reasons that people are not financially capable of doing things, and it's not, you know, just because people mismanage money. Like, it literally is never that.
Yes.
It's quite literally because, like, you know, things have happened. Say they were incarcerated, other things, you know, drug addiction, other things that have happened that cause somebody to not be able to, you know, get a job, you know, have a job, you know, stable home, have a, you know, stable lifestyle, whatever the situation may be. And it's like, how do we, like, we put, I just feel like we put all of these things and requirements in place for somebody to be a fit parent,
yeah,
or just like be a person, you know, that I'm like, but like, if you're playing from behind the whole time, how do you expect somebody to catch up? You yeah. know, how do we expect them to even, like, it's a joke. Like, that's a joke.
Well, it's you know, like, you think of all the things of like, okay, you're living in a place, rent is really expensive, rent is going up, but like, you're close to your family, so you like really can't move, or you don't have the money to like pick up your life and move somewhere cheaper, like,
exactly,
or you like, you have a job here, so why get rid of that job and like move somewhere where you don't, you know, have a job. I mean, like, mm-hmm. right now, like, it's still very difficult to find, like, if you think of like right now, it's very difficult to find jobs because a lot of jobs have been completely wiped out,
yeah,
because of COVID,
right?
And like, you think of like 12, 13 years ago when we were in a recession and yeah. literally couldn't find jobs. Those are things that, like, should not control a parent's really not even a parent. I mean, now we're just talking general, like, should not control a person's ability to have a home, like have a lease, like the upon of people who've been put out on the streets during the pandemic because they haven't been able to pay their rent.
Right.
Because how many jobs got wiped out.
Right. Well, then it also brings you to, like, again, like, the whole government thing of, like, the government is literally in charge of this. But it's like, you know, you tell me, like, cool. So say that I am, you know, able to get a job. So I can, you know, and then it's like, well, you should take any job that you can get. Okay, so say I do. Say I get a job as a fast food worker because that's the easiest thing available to me. And say they pay me $2 above minimum wage, so $11 an hour. And say I work 40 hours a week. You're telling me that an $11 an hour, 40 hour a week salary should be enough to pay for a home, a child, myself, maybe two children,
food,
a car,
gas money,
like all medical, a joke.
Yeah.
A joke.
Without any assistance.
Without any assistance? Are you kidding? Like, I.
That's such a whole nother tangent.
Yeah.
That we just went down, but, you know. It's a lot of current discussion.
Yeah, you guys get it. So then number three on this list is parental drug abuse. So parental drug abuse contributes to child abuse and neglect and is another one of the leading reasons why children are removed from their homes. In 2016, 92,000 children were taken out of their homes because at least one of their parents was struggling with drug abuse.
That's so sad.
Yeah. Again, are we ever going to discuss
the drug incredible abuse. Like drug abuse epidemic that's like happening?
Are we just like ever gonna
all around us like
try to get a grip on it?
Like when like every other week it was something about like opioid addiction, like literally, you know, happening on the news, but like we're not really doing anything about it.
Really? Cool. Number four is incarceration. When a child's only parent or parents are serving time in prison, foster care may be the only place for the child to go if another family member is not available to take care of them.
I just had such a bad thought. I was like, maybe it should be like when you used to go to Art Van and they'd have like, or like at IKEA, they have like the playpen. Mm-hmm. We just put one of those.
It's just like
on the prison.
Daycare. But, like, that's a, you know what? That's actually, like, a good.
Like.
Well, it's like.
It goes to the crime. Like, fuck a serial killer. Like, they don't deserve to see their child. But, like, you know.
Like, fuck you.
But, like.
Yeah, but, like, a parent that is even, like, a parent that has had drug addiction, you know, like.
Like, they should still be able to see their child.
Yeah, like.
Or have some connection.
If they are, you know, getting help, if they are, you know, working to, you know, better their life. It's like, again, why do we expect people to, like, better their lives, be perfect people? But we're like, but we're not going to help you. But we're actually going to take away your child. But we're going to make it super hard for you to get a job. But
yeah, I was going to say, Lord forbid, like, anyone tries to get a job after being incarcerated. Like,
literally.
Can't get shit. Like,
literally. And then
let's
number
just
five.
Burn it all down.
I think that's what we have to do. Number five is loss of parent or parents. Self-explanatory. If a child has lost a parent or a parent for any reason, and there's nobody else to take care of them in the family, then they will probably be placed in foster care. And then number six is parents' illness. Physical and mental illnesses can impair a parent and make it impossible for them to provide for their provide the care their child or children need. In some cases, children of ill parents are placed in foster care. So those are like the main, that is like the main umbrellas of kind of like why kids go into foster care.
Sure.
They obviously branch out, things happen. So now we're going to kind of talk about how kids get out of foster care, which mm-hmm. like are kind of self-explanatory, but like it leads us to some more discussion. So like the main reasons or ways that kids get out of foster care are obviously their parents becoming like, so I guess there are two kind of sections to this. It's like the way that kids get out of foster care and return home to their parents, or the way kids get out of foster care, which is aging out or getting adopted, you know? So talking about like their parents first is like, obviously, whatever reason they were put into foster care, the situation would have to be reversed. And I did a lot of reading, and like you were saying, it's kind of different state. It is definitely different state to state, and like it is all kind of case to case of, you know, what it is. But like, we fucking make these. I was reading just like some articles about, like, I read one about like Oregon, like a parent in Oregon who fought to even have, like, who I think their children were placed in foster care because they had a drug addiction, and it was like very young, like quite literally she gave birth and their kids were immediately placed in foster care, and it took her, you know, about 3 years to get completely clean of drugs and kind of get her life back on track, but she did it. And you know, even with that and kind of getting a job and living her life and doing things, it took her 8.5 more years to be on a regular visiting schedule with her child, and then it took her 3 more years after that for the court system to say that she could have her child back in her home.
Was the child just in, like, foster care at the time?
Yes.
So we let a child be in foster care for 8 and... No.
12.
11. Yeah.
12 11 years. And a half years. 11 and a half years.
Just... And, like...
Madison just tried to pinch her nose off.
I just... And I wonder if, in my magical little bubble, this will change now that we're kind of teetering towards the right direction of, like... Addiction is an illness. Like,
yeah,
it's out of a lot of people's controls to have drug addiction. You know, like, once you are addicted to drugs.
To a drug, yeah.
Like, you can't. It's not like it's there. You know, there comes a teetering point where, like, it stops being not their fault, you know, like.
Not their fault, but it stops being a thing where we can just be like, take care of that.
It's not a choice, yeah. It's not like.
Just stop doing that. Just stop doing that. Yeah. Like, yeah, just stop doing that now.
And, like, my hope would be that as, like, we start to treat it as an illness and as, like, people, like, you know, you can, to a degree, get over drug addiction, you know, to specific drugs. Mm-hmm. Like, that, like, we're like, okay, like, you're good now. Like, we don't have to be, like, this whole, like, whoa, they were addicted to drugs, so now they can't do shit for the rest of their lives. Like,
right.
You know?
Right.
Like, it's just a very, you know, it's like alcoholism, too, of, like, you know, like, the stigma of, like, that's just a choice that people are making to be an alcoholic, you know?
Yes. Oh, my God. And then there was this wonderful, like, a wonderful woman who wrote this, like, it was a journalist. I've got to find her name. If I can't find it right now, I'll find it later for you. Mm-hmm. But, like, I read an article where she was, like, just asking lots of questions and, you know, pushing questions about this specific topic, and, you know, specifically parents that are, you know, normal everyday people who have had drug addiction or have, you know, an alcohol addiction that lose their kids, and how, you know, like you were saying, they're seen as for the rest of their lives as like, well, they can't do shit, or, you know, they get incarcerated and all of a sudden it's like, well, she's going to be a criminal forever, or he's going to be a criminal forever. Mm-hmm. And she compared it, and she literally, like, included a statistic of being like, there are X amount of police officers in America right now who have, you know, been drug addicts or were troubled teens or, you know, adults who were on the wrong path, that, you know, their stories are celebrated, you know.
Yeah.
Their stories are like, well, look at golly gee, look at them, you know, they have made something for themselves. And, you know, because they are, you know, a service worker or whatever that is, we see them as like, you know, they turn their lives around and good for them. And, you know, that's such a strong story. But the minute a mother, you know, who has struggled her whole life and, you know, maybe herself was, you know, not in the best living situation when she was a child and now is in a situation where, you know, her children, you know, she's trying to better her life for her children, you know, basically goes to the same thing. We're like, well, no, you know, she was a troubled teen. She was a drug addict. Oh, she can't come back from that.
Yeah.
And she was like, and I would just like to know why that is. And like, that was kind of like the end of her like article. And I was like, Me too.
Yeah. I thought you were going to go on to talk about, like, you know, like, just, like, statistics of like alcoholism or like abuse, like mm-hmm. of positions of power, such as mm-hmm. police officers. But I was watching the news a lot because my grandparents were here and they would watch the news every day mm-hmm. for like 3 weeks. And we had in 1 week in Michigan, in like the Metro Detroit area, like two instances of a firefighter going out, like two different firefighters. One was a captain or a chief or something, mm-hmm. like going out on a call and getting into an accident because they were fucking sloshed.
Yeah.
And like the department revealing that there's a huge drinking like epidemic in the department and mm-hmm. that like, you know, drinking on the job has become like a thing. Like yeah. that was just interesting. And that was yeah. the whole thing.
But those are the things also like, you know, that we could get into that of being like, I'm, again, not saying that those people don't have lives and they don't go through pain and trauma, because they obviously do.
Yeah.
But, like, why are we so willing to give a police officer, a doctor who has, you know, made, mistakes in the medical field, all of these people, you know, that are in actual fields where they're like their job is to help people, why are we so willing to overlook or give them second and third chances and give them resources to help them, but you know, a mother of three kids is seen as a junkie?
Yeah, like, oh, she's not worth anything. And it comes yeah. down to like people's view of worth of
yeah
different people and different classes and
yeah
different positions in life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I need to go, like, boxing after this. I have so much anger in my heart right now.
Plate smashing.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Can we go plate smashing?
Yes, we will go. So that's, like, that was kind of that. And, like, kind of other things that people talked about with, like, it was just, so that was the main thing of, like, parents getting their kids back is hard. And it's not like a, you know, and that's the other thing that, like, comes with this whole, like, taking kids away, like taking kid out of a house instead of, you know, a social worker working with a family. Like mm-hmm. once it was the thing that you were saying when we were talking about Brittany, is like once it's done, it's like extremely hard to reverse. And like this in the same way is even not like permanently taking a kid out of a house, even temporarily taking a kid out of a house. Once it's done, once that is a decision, it could take not just, you know, a week, it could take years for this parent to get their child back simply because of paperwork and court and documents needed and blah, 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 blah.
And who knows what else that will mess up in their life of, like, you know, if that affects their job, if that affects their, like, public appearance, if that affects, yes. like, their family yes. life, you know?
Yes. Well, because I saw one article, there was a woman that said basically that same thing happened to her, was that she was fighting, she had two kids, and like you were saying, she, you know, one of her kids, her older kid was in foster care, and then she had another child who she had been taking care of, and you know, who was in her possession, is that what we call it? Do you possess children?
Care, guidance.
It was her child. It was her child. Yeah. So, you know, she had her other child and she had been taking care of that kid. But, you know, she's fighting for her other kid. And she had even said, like, she had a drug relapse and had to go to rehab, you know, during this time because she was struggling so hard to stay afloat, and the emotional trauma
yes.
of fighting to get her child back when she has like been struggling and working so hard to even just like get to this place was traumatizing.
Yeah. And it's so detrimental to the mental health of the parent as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's that. And that's kind of with all of the things, is like getting your child back for any reason. It's kind of the same story, is like, there are a lot of rules, there are a lot of regulations, there are a lot of court visits and, you know, guided visits and things like that. And then we move into the second way, kind of second section of kids getting out of foster care, which is adoption or aging out. And so adoption is pretty self-explanatory. They are adopted out of the system. And this can happen at any age, you know.
Yeah.
But that is, you know, that's a thing that happens. And there are times where the child is adopted by, could be adopted by the foster parent, but is also adopted by just, you know, a different person that is, you know, on the adoption list. There is also, I forgot about, like, this, which is kind of an in-between, and I read it in a couple articles, and this is where a child is released into the custody of a family member.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was seeing some of that, too.
Yeah, which is a different, you know, kind of a different situation. And then the last one, which, like, is, I feel like, the most heartbreaking to me sometimes, is, like, when they age out of the system, which is when a child turn 18 in the foster care system. So they could literally grow up their whole lives in different homes, you know, whatever. But they age out of the foster care system, and then they become an adult.
And then they're just there in life, in society.
They're just there. And, like, they're, like, in a lot of articles that have this one pulled up, you know, that I read, it's like there are policies in place, and you talked about a little bit, like, there are policies in place, there are things that are done to help them get apartments, and, you know, there's maybe a, like, big brother, big sister type of program, or, like, somebody to help kind of, like, guide them and, you know, help them in kind of finding a home, or, you know, like, going to college, or what their next steps in life are. But, like, that's not always the case. Like,
and none
we
of
think
that...
that's, we say that's the reality, but it's not, you know?
Yeah. And none of that is going, like, how it is currently set up, it is not giving everyone the same equal footing as someone who grew up in a, you know, middle class, two parent, like, stable household. Like, you know, was never taken away, did not have to move across different homes, did not have to switch school districts, you know? It's just not designed in a way currently that then at that 18-year-old sets them up in the same position as that other 18-year-old.
Never. It never is. So those are kind of the ways. And then there are, like, you know, other kind of informations about kids going into foster care, like, that have to do with, like, the difference in foster care versus group home.
Sure.
Which is, like, a whole nother situation. And, like, why kids are placed in group home and, like, the stigma around group home, which is, like, you know, kids are placed in group home. Because, like, a lot of what you read about kids are placed in group homes is because they are unable to, like, fit into a foster care home. And, like, their behavior is too bad to fit into a foster care home. So they have to be in another home with other kids whose behavior is also too bad to be, you know, in a normal home setting. And, you know, all of these things. So they instead live in a house with lots of other kids and an adult, several adults that come and go, you know, and kind of watch, like, an RA, basically.
Yeah. You really just unlocked a memory of my friend Mary, who I'm fairly certain her mom and stepdad at one point worked at a group home, but it was, like, a horse farm, and it was, like, an all-boys group home.
Yeah.
And I just remember it being very confusing, because we were, like, young, and I was like, what are they doing there? What's happening with these kids? Because it's just, like, we're not explained to it, I feel.
Yeah, we don't talk about it a lot. It's one of those things where it's like, well, shh, like, he's in foster care. And it's like,
I want to talk more.
I want to talk more about it. But, like, that's the thing about group homes that frustrates me is, like, when we were kind of talking about earlier is, like, you know, we decide as a system that a child is not unfit to be in a regular household, you know, for some reason. Like, they are not able to be a regular child.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what makes you say that? Like, what tells me?
And, like, if you think about children in general.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if they're giving them the same, like, leniency and, like, you know, opportunity to, like, fail in a group, like, in a foster home, like, as a kid would. Like, kids throw tantrums. Kids are little shits. Like, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, is there a difference in that perception of the child of if it was their own birthed child versus a foster child?
Like, and I think there absolutely is. Well, and I think also, like, you have to put the thing on it where it's like, I would be a little shit and, like, throw some tantrums and have some bad days if I had to move schools. Like, I was ripped out of, not, you know, ripped is an aggressive word, but I was taken out of my home you know,
for either good reasons or bad reasons,
right, like, whatever, out of my house where I lived for however amount of time with a family that I knew, you know, who I grew up with, a mother that birthed me, mm-hmm. and I was put into somebody else's home where, of course, like, I don't feel like I'm a part of, you know, how could I? I maybe have to go to a different school. My life is completely different now.
There might be other kids.
There might be other kids. They might have their own kids. And I'm expected to just be like, well, thank you so much for rescuing me.
I, a perfect orphan Annie.
Yeah, like,
will put on my tap shoes and...
and do a little dance for you. Like, I, like, why, like, what is the expectation? And I think that's a good question that you asked, is like, what are we expecting out of these kids?
Because you don't really have an out with, like, your own birth children. Like, you can't say, no, I don't want them anymore. I mean, you can, but, like, you know, there's a lot more that goes into that one. But, like,
bye.
But, like, you know, like, you can be like, this isn't working to mm-hmm. a foster child.
Yeah.
As sad as that is. Yeah. Like, you know, are you giving them the whole 100% that you give your child because you have to make that work?
Exactly. Like, are we, and, like, you know, not just, and I think, like, not even just the foster parent, but, like, the social worker, the system in general. Like, are we setting that kid up for success in any way? Like, what are we doing to make their experience so, like, easy?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think that's the thing, is, like, we have to be in a world almost where we are going to extremes to make their world just easier.
We should be treating each one of them. We, I, hello, yes, we, not
you and I, you and I, the new foster parents of 2021.
Oh God, but like, you know, you should be treating every child as though, like, hi, their life is the most important. They are my own child. Their life is the most important thing. Yeah. I must set them up for success as much as possible. Not, let's just get them through the system. Yeah. Like, let's just put them somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, because let's move on to the next kid.
Yeah, because then that also gives you the, like, again, the age out. And it's like, we talk about so much, and I see it so much of, like, you know, when you birth a child, you take care of that child until, like, not until they're 18, but until they're dead, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you take care of your child until they're dead, even though they're an adult. So it's like, when a kid is in the foster care system, though, it's the exact opposite. We age them out at age 18, and then we expect them to just, you know, be an adult and have, you know, do everything by themselves for the rest of their lives. Yeah. Where it's like, is this really an expectation that is realistic?
Yeah, and that's like... And I was trying to find real quick. I think it's here. Because they call mm-hmm. it emancipation when, like, another word for aging out. But, like, you think of emancipation and, like, kids getting out. That, for the year of 2019, the kind of estimated goal of who that would be is 16,880 kids that just aged out of the system. Also, we're not even talking about the 4,115 that ran away.
Yeah, that's another thing that we didn't even touch on.
No.
Is kids that run away.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
For literally whatever reason.
Whatever reason.
Yeah.
Well, and it, like, you know, it comes to, like, I saw a whole article and I couldn't get into this because I was like, I'll just cry the whole time about, like, you know, things that happen in foster homes, you know, when a kid is placed into a foster home that then they are, the cycle is repeated for them, you know, like they are abused again or whatever happens to them again, where it's like, what do you do when adult after adult, situation after situation that you're put in, you are taken from a place, told to trust somebody, and then you are put in a situation where you're in danger mm-hmm. or literally set up to fail. And then, like, and then still at 18, you're expected to be like, well, good job. Howdy do. We tried.
Literally, I guess we tried. There's just so many factors. I mean, I didn't even start. You talked about race a little bit, but I didn't even talk about, like, the statistics of, like, race of how many. And, like, even if you, like, proportionalize it, too, because there's the whole thing of, like, there's just, like, more white people. It was, oh, God, I saw a graphic. But it was, like, if you equal out the amount of people, like, versus, like the kids who are in homes of each race, like, that are in homes versus, like, in foster care, like, how it's still proportionally marginalized that, like, more black kids are ending up in foster care and stuck in foster care than white kids. Because, like, the numbers say there's more white kids, but if you proportionalize it properly, like, it's not true.
It's the same thing when, like, people argue, like, police brutality or, like, when they're like, eh.
That's the ones I was thinking. Yeah. Like, or the when graphics like, that were like, well, let's actually white
crime.
Make this.
Black on black crime. Fuck you if you ever say that. But, like, also.
Just first point.
But first point. But also, like, you know, like. White people, like, there are more white people, so yes, like,
yeah.
But then if you look at, like, the amount of black people versus the amount of black people, like, being killed, like, it becomes an extreme. Yeah. Like, it's the same thing with kids in foster care.
Exactly.
And I just, I can't.
And we're not even, like, including in that numbers, like, mixed kids, or, you know. Any other, you know, like, or there's, like, even a category in here that's unknown or unable to determine, like.
Yeah. Well, because I even saw, like, there was a whole thing, and I didn't even read it or put it in my notes, but, like, you know, it's, like, black kids, and then it's, like, it was, I think it was black kids, and then I think it was Native American kids, and then it was, like, Latino kids, and then, like, Asian kids, and then white kids. And I was, like, and still, and, like, in the article, they were, like, and still, white kids are placed back in their homes faster or more, or adopted faster and more, or, like, in a more successful situation somehow.
And I didn't even begin about talking about Native American kids in foster care, because also a lot of laws and legislations for a long time, and even still now, do not affect Native American children and do not help them, do not cover them.
Nope.
Don't do anything to... they
don't,
just get shit.
They don't do anything.
Yeah. Like, I didn't, I, like, read a couple of those and I was like, I can't even open that can of worms at this
literally
moment.
Literally.
I need, like, some wine.
I know. Well, and then I think about, like, I guess, like, my last point, you brought it up a little bit, was, like, you talking about, I guess, like, talking about, like, as younger children, like, talking about it, getting into it. Like, it's a topic that we don't get into, you know, we don't really learn about, you know. There are kids, like, especially, like, in the sense, like, my, like, you know, Cincinnati public school system, and many public school systems, there are homeless kids out the fucking wazoo, kids in the foster care system out the wazoo. And I'm not saying that, like, I need a fucking chart that tells me every kid that's in the foster care system.
No.
But, like, we're not even, it's the thing of, like, we're not made aware of it. So it's like, you know, these kids are coming to school every day. You know, they maybe have been placed in three different homes in the past week or, you know, month. And they're coming to school every day and they're doing this and, like, they're doing that. And, like, we have no idea what these situations are. And it's not until we get older that we're like, hold on. Like, why was I not educated about this?
Or why was the education... Oh, don't bring up that they're foster. You know, like, why was it shameful perspective? Why was it, they're in foster care? We don't bring that up.
Yeah.
Like, we don't talk about the fact that they're homeless. Like, oh, don't mention, you know.
Yeah. Like, why is it something that we don't learn about and we
don't
see?
Like, I can think of very little reasons that a child could have, like, controlled the fact that they are either homeless or in foster care.
Literally.
Like, they did not choose that situation for themselves.
Yeah. Well, and then you also think about, like, when we were even talking about, like, joking about, like, you know, all of the freaking musicals out the wazoo of, like, orphan kid that, like, gets into some trouble and, like, that little rascal kid, you know, that, like, lives in an orphan and whatever. But, like, you think about those musicals that we make it, like, a fun thing, but, like, I can't think of, like, one serious movie or, like, TV show, the cheetah girls Dorinda's in foster care. That's the best scene ever. That's one of the best moments ever. Well, is when we find out.
Yeah,
but, like, that, but, like, you know, regardless of that, besides the Cheetah Girls, like, I can't think of, like, one, like, actual children's thing that, like, explains or shows us the difference in family of, like, you know, it's not just like, oh, a black kid can have a white parent, or, like, you know, a white kid can, you know, live with Asian kids. It's like some kids live in a home with 13 other kids, you know, or whatever. Like, some kids live in a foster home. Like, there's none of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't have representation.
No. Cause, like, when you, like, I was trying to think of, like, examples, and I thought of, like, the Fosters, like, that, like,
yeah,
which, like, even, like, romanticizes in a weird way. Yeah. The whole, like, you know.
Yeah.
There's some problems there as well, but
there's So, in conclusion, guys, we don't know what to do.
Save the children. We'll just keep saying
Save the children.
Again, if you have a blueprint for how to fix the child services of America, email it to weeklywonderingpodcast@gmail.com.
Please, we're begging you.
I don't know what the fuck we'll do with it, but
we'll call Joe.
Yeah. Joe. We did it, Joe.
Literally, we did it, Joe. Okay, guys. Thanks for listening to that, like 3-hour rant?
Yeah.
Cool. But now we're going to move on to the happy segment of the podcast.
Oh.
The artist of the week segment of the podcast.
Yeah.
Brings us joy.
This is what we need to really refresh, cleanse the palate.
I sing, you sing?
Yeah.
Okay. Artist of the week.
Artist of the week.
Alrighty. So this week's artist of the week is Radiance Rings. This shop's owner is Lucy, and the shop makes super cool, affordable handmade jewelry. There's all types of stuff. They've got earrings, they've got rings, you know, all types of things. And everything's like custom colors, and they make custom sizes, which is really cool, like especially for rings. So it's for everyone. You can, the world is your oyster. So you can go to the Instagram and see stuff that they've made, or you can go to the link in the bio and look at what is currently in shop and available to buy. The shop does ship in the, like to the US, which is great. So once again, please go follow and support. The Instagram again is at Radiance Rings.
How lovely.
Yeah, super cool, super cute. You guys, this is the end. You know what it is.
Wear a mask.
God, I beg you.
Get your vaccine. I guess that could be like tagged onto that now.
Yeah.
Get your damn vaccine.
Wear a mask, get your vaccine. Black Lives Matter.
Yes. Please.
Jesus Christ.
Save the planet.
Yep, save it. Gotta save the planet.
Please.
And free Britney.
And save the children.
This is just going to keep getting longer and longer.
There's a lot of saving to do, apparently. Okay. All right. We'll continue on child services the next time. We'll talk about the adoption process, international and the U.S., so that'll be really exciting. So we'll catch you guys next time. All right. Bye.
Bye.